News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8.07. Dan and Dalton, good to have you along. 251-343-0106. Love for you to call the show if you like. That'd be great. Of course, that's also our text line. We'll look over some of those texts coming up here in just a bit. The House today is going to convene on the 119th Congress. I think it starts at 11 o'clock our time. So we'll see. Immediately following the procedural opening of the chamber, the House must select a speaker, and the chamber cannot conduct business until it elects that leader of the legislative body. Was it 2 years ago that it took the House 15, 16 rounds to get Kevin McCarthy in?
That was when McCarthy found his way outside looking in, and then eventually after resigning from his seat as congressman, spot at Fox News, right? That's where he is now, right?
Is he there?
Is he at Fox or is he at... I think Fox is where he makes his appearances.
He's at Fox now pushing guys in the hallway because he likes to push guys in the hallway no matter where he works.
Well, that was that Matt Gaetz he pushed? I can't remember. Or someone else said he pushed him.
He's kind of a big guy.
There were a lot of – remember, there were a lot of people angry at McCarthy before that vote. It seems to be a lesser level here, but still some discontent with how Johnson's.
You're right. It's not the same level of I hate that.
There were a lot of
gun,
personal accusations flying around 2 years ago.
You don't hear that with Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a candidate for speaker, they got to receive 218 votes to become the leader. Johnson is the presumptive first choice to lead the House after President-elect Donald Trump endorsed the Louisiana Republican. However, that does not mean that Johnson's going to necessarily glide towards becoming a speaker. Representative Thomas Massie, we've heard this name before, has promised to vote for someone else. Chip Roy, once again, one of those guys that, stirs it. He said that many lawmakers still have misgivings about voting for the Louisiana lawmaker for speaker. It seems to be more about what he's done in the past with the CRs, maybe his bending the Democrats. With McCarthy, it was a little more personal. Hey, he pushed me in the lunch line.
Yeah,
it was elementary with him, but this seems to be more about the man himself and the lawmaker himself.
Yeah, and this is really right now. It's Massie versus Johnson and allies, and then I want to say anywhere from 5 to 10 Republicans who say they are undecided on how they'll vote. And that was as of last night's different news hits that they were doing on primetime news. So things, I'm sure, have been in motion this morning. Maybe some minds have been changed and a lot of politicking going on in the halls of Congress. But this is not a strange place for the congressman from Kentucky here, Thomas Massie.
Yeah.
And remember, he went through a really, really difficult time. Last year, his wife passed away. I think for people following the news, it was sudden. I'm not sure if it was sudden for him or if it was something that they had known had been going on for some time. But obviously, that's a difficult time in anyone's life. And while he was doing that, he continued to make enemies in Washington and, elsewhere, people that pay attention to politics, because he stands on principle. And whether you agree with his principles or not, he doesn't really budge. And he's not budging on Mike Johnson. He says he gives way too much over to the Democrats in negotiations. He doesn't like his fiscal or lack of fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. And he's been through the heat with Trump before as well. Massie has. So he said, when asked about pressure to fall in line, this is from a Wall Street Journal article, Massie said, "I don't know how to say this without cussing. If they thought I had no F's to give before, I definitely have no F's to give now." And when he was, he angered Trump a while back when Trump said, what was it? I'm trying to find the exact line because Trump had one of his pretty cutting lines. A third-rate grandstander is what he called Massie back in 2020 when there was massive pressure on Trump to pass some kind of COVID stimulus, which he and all the other Republicans eventually caved to, that $2 trillion economic relief package. There was no one louder than Thomas Massie who was saying that they should not go through with that, that it would create all kinds of financial issues moving forward. That's when Trump called him a third-rate grandstander. He won Trump back enough to earn his support for his congressional race in 2022, and then you have Trump now endorsing Mike Johnson, so they're at odds again. But I bring that all up because earlier, Dan, you said you know, while I was talking about how this vote this morning is a referendum on Trump support in this new Republican Congress with this slim majority. And you said, well, will people be afraid to go against Trump? And Massey is a great story here because it shows that you can, if you believe in something that's alternative to what Trump believes in, you can go against him, you can feel the heat from him, and still come back around and earn his endorsement and win elections even without his endorsement.
Yeah, so you're saying he has a history where he fell out of favor and then
was able to return it, and others can as well. But he's the only one right now saying he will not be voting for Johnson. There's been some others that have said they're undecided. One of those who I'm looking at most closely is Chip Roy from Texas, who fiscal responsibility is his number one thing.
It's his middle name.
He was incredibly upset about how that CR vote went going into the new year, where they extended government funding through early February. And this was what he had to say after the vote finally passed, where they took a lot of the junk out of there, but according to him, still left too much crap in there.
I remain undecided, as do a number of my colleagues, because we saw so many of the failures last year that we are concerned about that might limit or inhibit our ability to advance the president's agenda. I respect, like Thomas, that President Trump supports Mike. I like Mike, he's a good friend. But let's consider what happened the week before Christmas. We violated the 72-hour rule twice, which means we didn't have time to read a bill. We had to have Elon and Vivek and the president and JD come in to kill a 1,500-page monstrosity to cut it down to 100 pages. It still spent $110 billion unpaid for.
So he doesn't like it. He didn't like the bill that passed. He doesn't like how Johnson's worked with Democrats. And Democrats say they're not going to help Johnson. This was House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries not that long ago.
There will be no Democrats available to save him or the extreme MAGA Republicans from themselves based on the breaching of a bipartisan agreement.
So with only a 4 Republican lead in that slim majority and all Democrats expected to vote against Johnson, he can only lose 2.
Yep.
And he's already down 1 with Massey. But yesterday on Fox Business, the House Speaker, or I don't know what his title is right now. I guess he's still technically House Speaker as we wait for this vote. But here he was talking with Larry Kudlow on Fox Business, fairly confident, although it doesn't really sound like it in his voice.
I think it's going to be okay, Larry. We'll have maybe one no vote, I think. I think we get it done on the first round. Certainly hopeful for that because, as we noted, we've got to stick together.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene's one of those flamethrowers in Congress, right? And she's always making the news and seems to be causing controversy left and right. Remember, she backed... Did she back McCarthy or she flipped on that? She's been a pretty standard backer of Johnson all the way through. And she said Republicans just kind of need to get their party in order here.
Republicans as a whole are going to have to put down their egos a little bit and just focus on getting the job done.
So it'll be interesting. You said 11 a.m. is when you think this vote
11 a.m., yeah. And this, for what it's worth, Johnson saying pretty much the same thing.
We need to stay unified so we can save the country. And I think that's an important message.
So Massey is he's in Kentucky's 4th congressional district, and that is basically the part of Kentucky that
the hills and the hollers.
It's part of it is Metro Cincinnati, Ohio. So it's right at the border, right there at the line, the river. You know, they've got the River Stadium, Riverfront Stadium. They used to have it at Cincinnati, so that river is in between Cincinnati and Kentucky, Ohio.
So he gets kind of those southern suburbs.
Southern suburbs of Cincinnati, and Louisville looks like it's near. I'm just wondering if it's something to do with his district that allows him to be so
certainly
independent. I mean, if he's making the people at home happy by what he's doing, that's all he needs to worry about. That's all any of these guys. Much of what they need to worry about, they want to get reelected.
Yeah, and like he's been going against the standard Republican way of spending and the way they've been doing things in government. He's been doing that and has made it through reelection. So he's popular among his constituents.
Yeah.
He does represent the people of the hills and hollers of Kentucky. There's some really great video out there of Thomas Massey. And again, I don't line up with him politically on many things, but there are a lot of things I do. And he's, his home is completely sustainable out there in the hills of Kentucky.
No kidding.
Yeah, he's got his own water system out there with a pond that's bringing water down to the house, solar. He's got it all. He's got chickens. It's really cool. I encourage you just to watch I think it's up on his social media, a video of that. You get to learn a lot about him as a person. And I think it's interesting the way he goes about things. He doesn't fall in line like everybody does.
Yeah.
Even when we talk about the Democrats here, there's no question. Every single one of them is voting against Johnson today. Now, there's people that are angry that not all the Republicans are going to fall in line. I'd be more angry if you knew every single person going in is going to do the same thing just because they have a D in front of their name or an R in front of their name. You need people who are willing to say what they think up there. And that's, I think that was a big reason why the Democrats actually had some issues in this past election, is because they all just fall in line. And when they're doing things that are the opposite of what their voters want and they're all falling in line, well, you get pretty widespread dissatisfaction with the party.
Yeah. Massey's doing something right in his district because he's got these metropolitan areas. Even if Louisville is not in the district, the surrounding...
I would bet Louisville's not in the district because
okay,
that is the bluest or that is the bluest part of the state.
Right, but it's certainly... Louisville is like right there on the line. So there are suburbs that are in his district. There are suburbs of Cincinnati that are in his district. And he lives with chickens and a solar panel. So it's kind of like that's a lot of different kind of people to try and win over. And so it looks like his kind of independent way against the grain a little bit works for him in that district. I don't know the history of him and his voters, but popular guy.
Yeah,
It's always interesting to see the people who are opposed to A, B, or C or whatever, and what gives them that political courage to be that way.
The reason Massey got into politics is, he made a lot of money in Silicon Valley. Actually, I think he had some digital company that he created, and he made pretty good money. He came back to Kentucky with his wife, and they were living out his dream like he's doing now. And I believe the local government started intruding, and they wanted to make some rules that were going to make it more difficult to live as a free person out there in the hills of Kentucky. And so he said, "Hey, I don't like this." Started pushing back at local council meetings. Found he had quite a bit of support among his citizens, his neighbors, and then that just grew and grew and grew. Now he's one of the loudest mouths in Congress pushing his way of life. Yeah, very interesting politician.
To think that his journey in politics started because the local government had ticked him off.
Yeah.
And he said, I need to find a way around this, or I need to find
a way to stop them.
To stop it and to change it.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And there's I'd like to see more politicians whose journey began that way. Your friendly neighborhood banker says, seems like a lot of infighting in the Trump presidency before it even gets started. Gardner says Massey also close with Rand Paul. Yeah, he's another one with libertarian leanings, to say the least.
Total sense, yeah.
Ricky loves Massey, he says here. And Natalie says Massey's the only one who doesn't have an Israeli lobby handler. Yeah, that was on that Tucker Carlson show. He said AIPAC, the Israel lobbying firm, has basically a handler that they give to every Republican in Congress. I don't know if he said every Democrat, too.
Wow.
I doubt Bernie Sanders has somebody there, but interesting. More on Mobile Mornings on the way. 824 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in just a moment. 251-343-0106. That works as a phone line as well if you want to jump on and have your voice, your takes heard. You know, I don't want to brag here, but I will. Throughout a underdog fantasy entry that I was using last night, yesterday, our own Riley Leonard from Fairhope, I had him going higher than 46.5 yards rushing against Georgia, and I had Jackson Dart with Ole Miss throwing higher than 2.5 passing touchdowns. Both of those happened, so my entry yesterday, a winner, and I had a good time playing underdog fantasy and watching the games, just as I've been doing all bowl season long. With over 5 million happy players and $2 billion won, Underdog makes it fun and easy to cash in on all your favorite athletes' performances. With their Champions game, you could win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on player stats, like yards or touchdowns in football, rebounds or assists in basketball, goals, assists in hockey. And they've got all your favorite leagues, teams, and stars to choose from. You could either stick to the same sport, pick a couple players from different teams, or you can mix and match teams and sports. And the more players you add to your entry, the more money you might win. Every dog deserves a second chance. With Underdog Rescues, you can get your money back and receive a promo if an early injury causes your entry to lose. Underdog is the best place to play Champions. To get started, download the Underdog Fantasy app. the Underdog Fantasy app. Sign up with promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. It's the Underdog Fantasy app, promo code Dalton. Have to be 19-plus in Alabama and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Thomas Massey, Sean says that Massey, we're talking about how bright the guy is, obviously, a graduate of MIT. Mm-hmm. That's where he met his wife. So she was also an MIT grad, so a couple of really smart people.
And I can't remember if they made their money together, if they launched the same, it was either an app or something. I'll need to dig in further. Kind of like J.D. Vance, where he made a lot of money, like a smart country boy, right? Yeah. Country boy that makes it out and makes a lot of money
in the online world. There's a guy from Robertsdale that has done well in Silicon Valley. Yeah. That went to Auburn.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
I've heard of that guy. He leads some small company, right?
You never know, right? You never know.
I think Apple is what it's called. So I've seen a lot of Massey love on the text line. That is not the general consensus nationwide. And I think a lot of people hear about the guy and certain votes he's made. Like, he's voted against funding Israel several times. And you hear people come out and say, oh, he clearly hates Jews. Well, he's just very consistent on what he wants to see money spent on. He doesn't like seeing money spent on militaries that aren't our own, right? So he has his own way of thinking about things, and I just like seeing people in D.C. that go the other way. Speaking of which, let's get into some state legislative actions here as we head towards the legislative session next month. It'll be here before we know it. So you have all of these pre-filed bills, and we've kind of been rolling through them one at a time. Many of them have no chance in hell, right, of passing, but they're mm-hmm. still fun to talk about. What about this one here? This pre-filed bill, Senator Roger Smitherman, a Democrat from Birmingham. This is from AL.com. He has pre-filed a bill, and I think if I ask the audience, what do you think this bill entails? No one would guess unless they'd already read the story. He's pre-filed a bill that would require couples to take at least one conflict resolution class before they can get married. He wants to see couples take a conflict resolution class before they are allowed to get married. Currently, the only requirements to get married in the state are to complete a marriage document and pay a recording fee. Although that always seems to be one of the more difficult steps, doesn't it? Like getting there, just getting the license that says you can get married. It always, I don't know if that just lines up being one of the last things that happens or if it gets lost in the wash while everyone's preparing for weddings. But nonetheless, that's all you really have to do to get married in Alabama. But under Smitherman's bill, a probate judge would still collect the fee, but there would be no requirement to obtain a license or undergo a ceremony to solemnize the marriage. Once a couple had completed their class and turned in documentation listing their names and verification that both parties are 18 or above or 16 or above with a parent's permission, then the marriage would be recorded. So you'd have to complete the class. The bill would also require the Administrative Office of Courts to determine minimum requirements for an acceptable premarital conflict resolution class and to create a form to verify class attendance. So basically they would have to create this whole new system to tell you what classes constitute a legal premarital conflict resolution class, and then did this couple individually or together go and have this recorded? I don't know if you'd have to have like a witness sign it or exactly what. A little ridiculous there.
Man, I don't even, this is just a joke. I mean, if you have some conflict resolution class, that's not going to be the silver bullet that straightens out any and all relationships going forward. Relationships are so complicated.
Yeah.
So much going on there. Man and woman, very different animals trying to live together and serve each other's needs.
Cohabitate
and all that kind of stuff. And this guy is telling us, hey, before you do that, before you get married, you got to go to one of these classes.
Now, he cites rates of domestic violence and issues within homes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible. What is this? This doesn't fix that.
No.
Sending some violent person to an hour-long class.
I don't like the fact that you have a state senator telling me what to do before I get married.
Your thoughts on the text line, 251-343-0106.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings, 834. 251-343-0106. And the text line is humming along here with Senator Smitherman saying we got to go to some sort of a class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
conflict resolution class before you get married. And some people are pointing out on the text line that, in fact, certain religions, Catholic among them, that I guess we would say require you to have some sort of
premarital class.
Yeah, sit down.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we spent, you know, the first half.
I'd rather the religion do it than the state.
Yeah. And, you know, first half of the hour, we were talking about Congressman Massey, who got involved in politics because of local government overreach,
yeah.
Right? And so is this government overreach that Smitherman wants to pass a law that requires pre-marriage conflict resolution classes? And, on the text line, Michael said, thank you. Michael said, all Catholics have to go through premarital classes. I figured Protestants did, too. Maybe that's part of why the average practicing Protestants have much higher divorce rates than the average practicing Catholics. This is not my...
I don't have those stats in front of me.
I don't have any stats in front of me either. I would say also you have to weigh in. I think it's been more of a Catholic dogma for longer, and I could be stepping in it here depending on who's listening.
No, I don't know.
You're
right.
But I think it's been more Catholic dogma for a lot longer time that divorces are not the way to go. Like it's against the church's teaching. Right. And not that Protestants are taught that it's cool, but there's been, I think, less of a stigma for Protestants in divorce than there have Catholics.
Catholics, by historically, you've got larger families, too.
That, too.
So there's more to play into it. Like you've got five kids, you're thinking, we got to keep this thing together here for the sake of everybody involved.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of things involved. But, yeah, that is a good point that Catholics, that's kind of, I guess, one of the requirements. Now, Ashley from Lucedale says the problem is it's too easy to get married. Let's see. T-Bone says only two ways to resolve marital conflict, divorce or yes, dear.
Well, see, that's kind of what you were saying.
I was saying I think the best premarital conflict class you can have.
Come from an older dude.
Yeah, just having a fatherly figure. Doesn't even necessarily need to be a father all the way through. And I think the more voices, the better. The more men that can tell younger men, you can argue all you want. Once you have a girlfriend, once you have a wife, you can get into an argument. You could say your piece.
You could feel like your point of view was stronger.
You could feel that way, but to her and to her friends and to her family, you will never win an argument. So I think in a lot of instances, you know, it does become a matter of pride where you say, hey, man, she's lighting me up over something she's completely wrong about. And, you know, this is daily for a lot of men, weekly for a lot of men. Some men get along swimmingly with their wife all the time, 24/7.
Yeah, where's that guy?
I think most people have an argument a time or two. And if your pride is important too, speak up, say, yeah, I don't think that your point of view is right on that. But just know you are going to lose that argument. And I think if you have older men
explain,
telling dudes until they're of marital age, that exact rule, you can argue all you want. You can get mad. You can punch a door. All it's going to do is hurt your hand. But you're going to lose that argument. I think that would probably help a lot with the conflict resolvement. And maybe women need to be told that, too. They need to be told, hey, you know, you can go in guns blaring. You're going to win the arguments. Maybe go a little lighter on the old fella because you're going to win the argument.
Yeah. I've got some experience in that. And I think that's actually kind of... It sounds like old school thinking, or not the greatest wisdom, but I think it is wisdom actually. That here's how it goes. Here's how the river bends. Okay,
yeah.
I know what's about to happen to you, man, because it's happened to me. Here's the way it goes. Here's how to react to it to keep
and
the peace.
Maybe that is the issue at large. Is just not with this particular issue, but.
With any issue.
What everyone goes through in the course of a lifetime, if you don't have a strong support system of people that could tell you, hey, I've been through that and this is the way to do things, or hey, I've been through that and this is what I did and it is not the way to go about things, then we wouldn't be at a point where you have a state senator who's trying to require premarital conflict resolution classes.
Right.
If you had a good support system like the Catholic Church provided there, like providing classes for them before marriage for Catholics. So that's the issue. You have a bunch of people who have not been told how to live with someone else peacefully. Well, not been taught how to cohabitate peacefully or see someone else's point of view. They get married for one reason or another, and then you just have, you know,
one
issues,
fight after another.
One right after the other, and, and many times they turn violent.
It's interesting also that there are public service announcements out there that will tell gentlemen, fathers, like, for more information on how to be a good father. Like,
I've heard that.
Like, your dad is a really conscientious father. He's a good man, and he raised his boys conscientiously. I had a father that I've had all the faith in the world. He was not a perfect man, but when he talked to me, I believed him. When he told me things, even if I didn't understand it in the moment, eventually I would. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a lot of young guys just, they simply don't have that, or they have somebody barking the wrong things in their ears. And I don't want, you don't want to put up with that, like, you know, stoking the fire. Where, you know, I think we were both happened to have dads who understood the way things should be and conscientiously raised kids in that way.
Yeah, and then I'm sure a lot of these couples, a lot of these people that Smitherman is aiming this this bill towards probably grew up in homes where it was volatile, and they saw their parents fighting, and worse, probably. So how do you fix it? I mean, I'm here destroying him for putting this idea out there because I feel like it's massive state government overreach, but it is a problem, you know, now that we talk about it. And how do you – it extends beyond just marriage issues and violence within homes, but, you know, there's a lot of people that need to learn how to act beyond the home as well.
Yeah.
Interesting.
True. If his heart's in the right place, that's fine. But I don't like the idea of a state government mandating that you get
– take a class they've decided on.
Right.
Maz says, the Catholics make you go to a marriage class by a priest that is forbidden to marry? I don't know, Maz.
Priests can't marry. So that's always the argument, the long-time argument is, what does he know about marriage?
Mm-hmm.
He's a priest.
Yeah, I'm not ready to dive into that argument.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, and so he's got his own training that he's been, you know, he's been taught, and he has experience with couples and counseling. That would be the argument back, that he knows more than you think.
GC says if there are children involved, they should have a parent class for the children. Need a class on teaching me how to wash dishes is what GC also says. So good there. Keep the text coming, 251-343-0106. And I was just going to tie this to it as well. On the Republican side of the aisle, on the national stage, Katie Britt, also, you could classify this as, I guess, as government overreach, but we've been talking for some time about her efforts along with, it's a bipartisan effort, really. Fetterman's been involved on this from the ground floor. But social media and making social media safer for kids and teenagers. And now she is floating in a op-ed that I know it made it to Yellowhammer. It might have been on several sites around the state. But she wants to see warning labels on social media, kind of like with cigarette packages that tell you that social media can be an issue for your mental health. She wrote, I've heard from parents and community leaders and even students themselves have reached out to me about how social media is making bullying worse in school. Bullying was bad enough when I was growing up. Now with social media, it's worse. And so is the state of mental health for America's kids. And then she goes through some stats on how certain things like depression have risen dramatically over the years. But her fix here, she says, is for users to realize the reality of the dangers of social media, and she wants to see warning labels when you open up that Facebook app or open up the X app, or I don't know, would they need it on LinkedIn? What all would this classify? I'm not exactly sure. Is that considered government overreach, or is that something that's necessary also?
Well, when you're trying to protect children, that's one thing, right? I don't think the LinkedIn's the spot where things are going to go haywire.
they might accidentally get a job.
Billy's been promoted. Oh, well, he was getting bullied the other day. But I don't know how big a problem that is. Bullying is already... When I hear about anti-bullying... I'm not as sympathetic as maybe I should be, because it's kind of like you're just dealing you're dealing with the world that you're about to enter. At some point in your elementary education, you're coming along and then kids enter the fray, or maybe the kid that you knew in the first grade, now he's a different kid in the fourth grade. He's rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. He's bullying. I guess I should be more sympathetic because I think there are consequences that are real and tough for some kids. The other thing I would say is, like when you're on a team, you're under the jurisdiction of your coach. I've got nothing to do with that, right? My kid's on a team. I try not to ever interfere with what's going on that team. And the reason I say that, and you say, well, how about if he's being unjustly? Life's unjust.
Yeah.
I mean, make the adjustment. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I may be way out of bounds on my way of thinking, but it was the way I was raised.
Right.
Because my dad was within a block and a half of where we played our baseball games, and he could have come at any time or not come at any time. And he had a job, and he was busy and all that, but he never, ever piped up about the coach or the... He just thought, it seemed to me, it was like, that's your world, Danny. If you're in the fourth grade or the eighth grade or wherever... That's your world.
Yeah.
Deal with your world. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
It never occurred to me that I needed to go call somebody about a bully. You had to somehow relinquish or vanquish the bully on your own, mm-hmm. As uncomfortable as
I guess
it could be.
The difference is, and we've talked about this several times over the years, but you could leave those bullies, right? And eventually the noise would stop.
Yeah.
Or if they were bullies... they were sleeping over or something, then they might be talking trash about you, but you never know until maybe you went back to school. Nowadays, you have these social media group chats.
Completely different.
And they're talking terribly about people all day. So, a warning on... Now, I know some states... Florida did something, but...
Some states want to pass... Let's see. Are we still on right now?
Some states want to pass... I guess I lost the audio there for a second. Some states are passing rules that you have to have, like, a parental... a parent actually notify whatever the social media company is that you are allowed to have as a child or a teenager a social media account. I think some states, some countries, they're trying to make it so that you can't even get a social media account until you're of a certain age, mm-hmm. whether it's like 16 or 18. But a warning label, for me, I mean, I could see how that might help.
Wait, is it,
I don't know if it's the big difference maker.
When does it enter your life?
I have a feeling when you pop open the app, you would have something sitting right there at the front that you have to click through that says social media, some kind of warning. I mean, just like you see on any kind of tobacco that you might buy, or I think alcohol has to have something on it, the bottle or something like that. So it would basically be the same thing on your phone. You open up the app and it says, warning, this could cause mental health issues.
On the text line, help me out and help Dalton out as well. At what age did you have to start really being concerned about all this for your children? Because this was kind of, I missed out on this era, but I don't want to be oblivious to it. And Dalton's going to have to be dealing with it here pretty soon.
Yeah, probably sooner than I'd like to think about.
So at what age, if you have kids today that are, when did you have to, as a parent, start to think about stepping in and making sure that certain things were in line as to what they were using and how applications were being used and if any harm was being done?
Yeah, let us know. Now, Ricky texting in, he says, it's okay for porn to be on the phones, but the truth on TikTok is too dangerous. Well, I think a lot of states are actually making it so that porn is not available on the phone. You've seen that. That's been a major push in legislatures over the last few years,
mm-hmm.
Especially in conservative states. I would say the liberal states are not doing that. Summerdale Tony says, bullying's always been around. The difference now is that parents used to teach you how to deal with it yourself. Nowadays, they want you to have counseling. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of parents also used to teach you to go up and smack that bully in the face or punch him in the face. It's tough to do that digitally, and also you get in much more trouble now for doing it physically than you would have 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, I guess so, but it's more about the courage to do it. I mean, the bullying has always been difficult to deal with.
Or at least the mental fortitude to not listen to what they're saying. That saying? If someone calls you a purple elephant, it doesn't mean you're a purple elephant.
Yeah.
I've used that already a million times, by the way. This texter, GC, says, do you think if you want to look at something bad or wrong that you will stop and read the warning label, like a warning sign before you walk into the strip club? Yeah, all it does is give these companies less liability, right? A little more coverage.
Yeah.
CB Carl says, Dan, it sounds like you aren't a snowflake and never raised one. Yeah, I can say that. You didn't raise any snowflakes. And Michael says, my 15-year-old still doesn't have any social media. Michael, if I can make it to 15 without mine having social media,
wow,
I would consider that a grand success.
You'll be awarded on Capitol Hill if you'll get some sort of a commendation for being such a diligent parent. 850 FM Talk, 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Thanks, CB Carl. And, I was not the roughest redneck or toughest kid in the hood, but there is something to be said for learning to stand on your own. It's Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:55. On the text line, Doug Stone wanted to put warning labels on country. Was that like one of his songs? So that's probably a Doug Stone song. He was a pretty famous artist. Late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Doug Stone.
The song Warning Labels.
Warning Labels. Yeah. That was just a definitely written country lyric.
It's about putting warning labels on those sad, sad country songs to make you think about what
I got you. Like,
yeah,
you should
know ahead of time.
Don't break this glass. Okay.
What a throwback there, Jason. 855 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming up, we have the Jeff Poor Show. And he's got a great guest list once again. Coming up, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News joins Jeff in hour number one. In hour two, former State Senator Dick Brubaker will join the show. And those conversations with former and current legislators take more and more importance as we get closer and closer to February. And State Senator Chris Elliott joins Jeff in hour number three. I think as we come up on this new legislative session, of course, most people I think are wondering whether gambling will come back into the conversation. From what we've been looking at and talking about over the last few months, sounds like any kind of full-scale gambling or a pared-down version of that where you just have sports gambling or just certain casino games, it doesn't sound like any of that will be in the mix this year, but if they do anything, it would be just straight lottery.
Yeah.
That sounds like that, me to be most likely.
It's the simplest conversation to have with someone. Like, are you for the lottery or not?
Mm-hmm.
It's the simplest way to get to gambling, or the simplest question to ask.
Theoretically,
but I think that's why it's so cut and dry, because you can quickly get the numbers on this. Alabamians are or not for gambling, and when it comes to the lottery. I think that the stats have shown that they are for it.
Yeah, and you hear politicians say that, and then when they all come together and lobbyists come in there as well, then it becomes less clear cut. So I don't know, and Jeff would have a lot better idea of whether a clean lottery has a chance to pass this year, but that'll be a topic. I also think with the no overtime tax.
Yeah.
And how much money they saw come out of the state ETF coffers from that. Although, State Senator Chris Elliott's not concerned. He said the ETF was already loaded and that he likes to see the tax cuts for hardworking people in Alabama.
Same with Daniels on the northern end of the state, Democrat, who said we underestimated it, but it's still all good.
But they aren't certainly the only ones. They aren't the ones who... There are a lot of people who feel the opposite way.
Exactly.
State Senator Arthur Orr. And then you had the grocery tax cut, 1 cent. I don't know if we'll ever get that other cent. But plenty of money coming out of state coffers from tax cuts and from new programs. So I think next month that's going to be a big topic as well. School choice, and then also maybe changing the way you fund schooling in the state, how much more that might cost while tax cuts are ongoing. I think if I had to guess, that would be the main theme next month.
The Choice Act already began today or yesterday, whatever, but there's
baby steps.
Yeah, definitely baby steps there. It's not like full on, here we go, you can pick your school. Jeff is next. It's 8:59, Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton.